Chapter 19. My head was swimming by the time I found Pinky conferring quietly with probably Rose. All three of us were wearing exoskeletons and moving slowly and cautiously, even with their protection. An exoskeleton was helpful under Scythe's acceleration, but it was no insurance against carelessness. Barras and the other evacuees were still pressed down into individual pockets in the floor, like dolls half sunk into quicksand. The sphere robots bustled around them, attending to those who needed more assistance than the others. Most of the refugees were able to cope on their own, but about a tenth needed additional medical support, and the ship was providing it. They had oxygen masks, pressed over their faces like inverted flowers, with the stalks emerging from the part of the floor immediately next to their heads. Some had nutrient or anesthetic lines, provided by similar means, and monitored by the robots. There were broken limbs, fractured ribs and skulls, open wounds and older, badly healed injuries that still gave trouble. "Have you been able to do much?" I asked probably Rose.
"A little, yes," she said ruefully, "until the ship saw what I was doing and decided it could do a much better job, yes and yes."
"I think, in general, it will always do better than us, provided it understands what we want. It's like a loyal dog. It wants to please, but doesn't always know how. How much glass is also still pulling strings, I can't say." I paused, eyeing the pig. "Pinky?"
"Nothing to be said, Stink.
But I might want to say it anyway. I'm sorry. That's all. I wish it had happened differently." I looked beyond him to Barras and the others.
"Have you told them?"
"I thought I'd wait until I knew what the clever people are planning."
He planted his hands on his hips.
"So what's it to be? We're all in this together, Pinky."
"Sure we are.
I mean it. And if by clever people you think I'm part of deciding what your fate is, you've got it badly wrong. Glass and Lady Arik had plans for me, plans you were a part of, not the other way around. Have they told you about the machine Glass has been making inside this ship?" He looked at me warily.
"What do you know?"
"Enough to think I should be a little frightened by it all." He considered my response, nodded curtly.
"If you'd seen it in action, you'd understand why.
Lady Arik says this is something new, something beyond what they've used in the past. They're going to use this technology to make some new order of weapon. Helps to have a plan." He made to turn away, but I stopped him with a touch on his shoulder. "The machine needs a blueprint. If we had that blueprint, I imagine Lady Arik would have told me."
"And did she?"
"You know that she didn't. You know that, because there's no way she wouldn't have shared every detail of this plan with her loyalist friend. So, tell me." He met my eyes, and for a moment I felt as if all the rage and grief that had built up inside him had been saved just for me.
"What's to tell?"
"She wants me to meet Neville Clavaine. It's something to do with the location of a planet, and I suppose whatever that planet is hiding has something to do with the weapon Lady Arik wants to make. And I suppose also that the Gideon Stones, which have just cost us so much." He snarled,
"Don't speak to me about cost when you've lost nothing."
"It's hard to have anything to lose when you're a man without a past. A man who keeps being lied to."
"Why would you think you're worth the trouble of lying to?"
"Because something doesn't fit, and you know it." I kept my voice level, trying to reach the core of reasonableness that I still believed lay within him. "I spoke your true name. I called you Scorp.
Guess you overheard someone else."
"No, I doubt that very much. And so did you when you first picked me up on it. No one around you would be so foolish as to touch a nerve like that." He grunted something that was not quite disagreement, even if it tortured him to do so.
"So what's your grand theory, Stink?"
"My theory is that the knowledge could only have come from Neville Clavaine, this figure I'm yet to make contact with. Yet a little bit of him was already inside me, and I didn't even realize it."
"You were brothers?"
"Supposedly. But brothers who last spoke to each other in the Crucible of War, 500,000 years ago. Neville wouldn't have known you then. I shook my head slowly. It doesn't add up. However that knowledge got into my head from his, it's from much later in his life. But we never met again. I added it more firmly for the sake of my own sanity. We never met again. Then plaintively, did we?
You think I'd be the one to be told if you had. I think you probably know more than you want to admit to me. Perhaps more than you want to admit to yourself. You got the wrong pig, Pinky said.
Perhaps I did, I answered, moving past him. Because if you were truly a friend of Neville Clavaine, I think you'd have the decency to tell the truth to his brother.
You don't, he began.
Leaving Pinky to fume in his own self-contradictions, I knelt next to Barris and explained our predicament and immediate intentions. He was the one I felt the most immediate connection to, and the one I felt could be trusted to keep details in mind. But there was no point in telling only Barris, and he was in no immediate position to spread the word to the others. So once we had spoken, I moved along the rows of embedded bodies, striding the narrow tongues of floor between them, and tried to give as honest an account as I could. Lady Arryk's stronghold is gone. The only survivors are aboard this ship. Pinky, probably Rose and Lady Arryk herself. Glass, who saved you, is being healed somewhere else in this ship. Snowdrop and the others did us a huge favor, giving us the distraction we needed to make a bolt for interstellar space. Amori is still helping us, providing a distraction with the shuttle. What we're doing now is capitalizing on their bravery and selflessness. But I'm afraid it'll mean running the engines very hard for many hours.
How many hours?
Asked one of the pigs, her face staring up from the neat swaddling enclosure of the floor.
We can't move, can't talk to each other.
After 13 hours, we might have some idea how safe we are. Somewhere between half a day and a day, we might have some respite.
Let us leave, said another. I can bear this, I can walk around, just like you, and I won't even need that frame.
I'm sure you could, I answered, but the ship came up with this arrangement. It decides when it's time to end it.
Then we're still prisoners,
lamented another. You're alive, I countered, and you've got a future. That's more than any of you had in Chasm City.
You have to agree,
probably Rose called, overhearing our exchange.
He has a point, yes and yes, and we will take care of you, whatever it takes, and verily.
A sharp demand.
Where are we going?
A place called Ararat, I answered, about 22 light years away, or 23 years flight time.
Why'd we want to go there?
Demanded another.
Good fucking question,
Pinky interjected in a surly undertone. Lady Arryk needs me there. It's a pattern juggler planet.
Pattern what?
A voice queried. I dredged up the few facts I felt sure of. They're a form of alien life, distributed throughout a living ocean. An information storage biomass. Intelligent in some respects, but not really conscious in any way that we'd recognize. Harmless, for the most part, and cooperative on occasions. A sort of living archive, capable of manipulating the deep structure of our minds, rewiring our brains, temporarily or permanently, with new information structures, memories, modes of perception, and so on.
Water planet? A voice asked.
Yes, I admitted. Lots of it. Jugglers are found on several worlds, but they all have similar characteristics.
Water and pigs don't mix very nicely, the same voice said.
There'll be some dry land as well, according to Lady Arryk. Somewhere we can land and make some kind of camp. We shan't be the first. Pinky has lived there before. He's proved that it isn't some kind of watery hellhole. He called out,
Don't go overselling it, Stink. There are reasons I never wanted to go back.
There are also reasons why we might not want to rob these people of all hope just right now, I replied, smiling through my teeth.
First, we have to get there, though,
Barris said, pleasing me that he at least accepted the fact of our destination without complaint.
And that's not a given, is it?
We'll find a way, I answered, with more conviction than was warranted. This ship will need to keep us alive for the crossing, but it isn't as bad as it sounds. Time will slow down for us once Scythe gets close to the speed of light, which will take less than 3 months of steady acceleration. About 10 years will pass. A long time, but quite a bit less than 23 years. My hope is that the ship can put us all into hibernation. But to do that, it'll need to provide more than 100 caskets.
I heard that pigs don't do too well in those caskets, commented a woman, perhaps one who had a little more knowledge than the others.
I won't pretend otherwise, I said, nodding slowly. It's not right, but it's the way things are. The minds who spent centuries perfecting reefer sleep technology weren't really thinking about hyperpigs. But we know it can be done. Pinky is proof of that, and Lady Arek says they've learned some useful measures, measures that ought to work on any of you.
These caskets are aboard, somewhere?
It was a question I had been hoping to skirt for now. If they aren't, we'll make them. The ship can do that. And if for some reason it can't, or doesn't understand our needs, then we go through those 10 years the hard way. Pinky grumbled.
You'd better mean that, Stink.
Oh, I do, I said, fierceness breaking through my reserve. Trust me.
I think he does,
probably Rose confided to her friend, but loudly enough for me to hear.
Yes, and verily. And you should start taking him at his word, too.
Yellowstone was small enough to cover with my fist. It was still showing its dayside, and the rust belt still bisected it. But it would not be long before the planet, its belt, its moon, and the furthest of its habitats could be encompassed in my grasp. It meant nothing, almost no distance at all on an interplanetary scale, let alone interstellar. But I allowed myself some slow-growing encouragement that we might yet make our escape unhindered. The brightest of the fires had begun to ebb, that dark garland returning to a procession of unlit ashes. But Omori was still trackable, still managing to keep a pace of the flows.
He'll exhaust his fuel any time now, Lady Arek said. After that, it'll be a matter of time until they close in on him.
Those flows are almost overkill for what he represents. One small ship, unlikely to be carrying more than a few of us, and which can't ever leave this system. They understand us well enough to know all that.
They've been missing their sport, Pinky said from the seat next to hers.
Lady Arek shook her head in bitter regret.
Omori did not have to do this.
But he did, and nothing you could have done would have stopped him. Now at least we still have one point of distraction. I nodded at the displays grouped around Lady Arik's control seat. They were in a markedly different configuration compared to when I had left. You seem to have made progress with the ship. Do you think you can get it to accept direct commands? Or is it still going to be a case of telling it what we want and letting it choose how to interpret our wishes?
I've made some small progress. For now, I am grateful that it's taking us anywhere at all.
So am I. But Barrison, the others can't stay in those acceleration pits for the rest of our crossing.
What do you propose?
As soon as it's safe to do so, we reduce our acceleration. Even if it's only for a day, it'll give probably Rose time to assess the condition of the refugees and make them feel that they're more than inconvenient cargo we just happened to have been saddled with. Lady Arek looked at me sharply.
Is that what they believe?
I think they may have cause to, if this goes on.
We have to survive, Clavaine.
A hardness entered her voice, too obviously forced to convince me that it was part of her character.
I am sorry that it is hard on them, but if we let the wolves catch us, a few bone fractures will be the least of their problems.
Stink has a point, though. Glass brought him aboard. The moment she did it, they became our responsibility.
I do not deny that, but...
A moment, please, Pinky. What is it? I asked.
I cannot be sure. I know only what I do not wish it to be.
Pinky purred.
A little less cryptic, your ladyship.
Lady Arek made an enlargement of Yellowstone, swelling back up as if we were still within its gravitational clutches. I have been monitoring a possible development, and it troubles me.
there has been a drop in albedo in this area of the face. I understood her words, but not their significance to our plight. A drop in albedo means less reflected light, or less light reaching us. There's something getting in the way of our view of Yellowstone. If it were a single solid object, we would see it. But at this distance, there's nothing to resolve. Just a drop in the reflected light across a circular region about a third of the diameter of the planet, like a faint grey thumbprint on a picture. Lady Arryk made some adjustments to the display parameters, and the face of Yellowstone gained a new disfigurement beyond the bisection of the Rust Belt. The two were interlinked, but not the same phenomenon. "Wolf flow," I said, but aimed directly at us, so we stare down the column rather than seeing it from the side as we have the others. It's been growing over several minutes, spreading in its extent and deepening the albedo drop. Then they've locked onto us after all. The distractions helped, but not enough to give us time to slip free. I was hearing my own words, marveling at their cold detachment. "Do you have a distance estimate? An interception solution?" Lady Arryk gave a shrug of precise helplessness. "They could be 10,000 kilometers astern of us, or 100,000. If we change course, we should see the albedo locus shift relative to the planet, and that will give us an idea of their distance and spread. But it won't help us run any faster, and our turn will only confirm that we are a viable target." "Looks like they've already made their minds up about that to me," Pinky said. "I do not think this flow is as concerted as the other," Lady Arryk demurred. "It's exploratory, a relatively small commitment compared to the total aggregate around Yellowstone. That suggests to me that the wolves do not believe we are worth throwing all their resources at." "Then we hold our nerve," I said. "Keep running, but with no change in our course or acceleration, and hope that the flow loses interest in us." Lady Arryk looked at the display, then back to me. "I see little point in informing Barris and the others about this. There's nothing they can do, so why add to their concerns?" I disagreed. "We have to build trust here. I think the safest way to do it is to be as open and transparent with Barris and the others as we are with ourselves." "They won't, thank you," Lady Arryk said.
"They won't," Pinky said. "But he's right, too. If we only share the good news, they'll never know when to believe us."
Lady Arryk was neither right nor entirely wrong. The refugees took the news of our predicament with the full range of responses, from fury that I had burdened them with worry about a situation totally out of their control, to a grumbling but mostly stoic acceptance, to a cheerful resignation, to heartfelt gratitude that I had spared them nothing of the truth. Mostly it was somewhere in the middle, but verging on the opinion that it was better to be informed than to remain in ignorance. "I won't deny that we're in trouble," I told them, walking along the aisles between the pits, each footfall a fresh lesson in pain, despite the exoskeleton. "But if any ship has a chance of escaping the wolves, this is it. We think it likely they picked up something, enough to tease their interest. Maybe some interaction of ours with the debris around Yellowstone, or a perturbation of the magnetosphere. But they aren't sure we're anything but a ghost signal. That's why they've only sent a relatively small number of elements after us. It's a fishing expedition, not a committed action. In the meantime, our friend Omori is giving them something real to chase." My timing could have been better. Lady Arryk called down, interrupting my sermon to inform me and my audience that the shuttle had blown up. Omori had used munitions, or the shuttle's last drops of fuel, to deny the wolves a fresh source of material for their transformations. Pinky and I risked our lives to obtain the Gideon stones, but both of us had hoped to make it back alive. Omori knew exactly what he was doing when he took that shuttle. There was no way back for him, no hope of survival. But he wanted to give us a tiny advantage, and he did.
"A good man, yes and yes,"
probably Rose affirmed. Someone asked if it was too late to go back to the swinehouse. "The swinehouse is a pile of rubble at the bottom of the chasm," I said. but you're welcome to lodge a complaint. Perhaps when we next make port, you'll be lucky or stupid enough to find a ship going back in the other direction. The question had not been meant seriously, but in that moment I was feeling an acute awareness of the sacrifices made for us by the others. We're not finished, not by a long margin. Ahead of us will be fresh problems and worries. But if I'm to treat you with the respect you all deserve, then you need to know the worst of it, as well as the best.
It was the right thing to tell them,
Barris murmured to me as I passed his station,
and they'll come to understand that. In the meantime, did you know this man, Omori?
I thought about another lie, one that would make the sting of his death seem more personal to me, and therefore more noble. I'd like to say I did, but until a few weeks ago we'd never met.
Whatever he did, whether he saved us or not, I think we can agree that he gave us time.
I think we can.
To live is better than not to live, even for a few hours, in the company of friends.
Yellowstone was a dulling coin, nearly eclipsed. I stared at the image for long seconds, processing my own thoughts, not wanting to arrive at the inevitable conclusion.
It's thickened, I said. They've been pumping more units into the flow.
There's no doubt, Lady Arryk said. I think we might be looking at around 1 million elements at a conservative estimate. Scythe was able to deal with them in small numbers. Glass even brought a single unit inside the ship, so I could watch her destroy it in person.
But 1 million will be a little more than we can fight off, by a factor of about 10,000, is my guess.
This change in the flow happened after Omori's death?
No, it started before, Pinky said, but now they can afford to fling more of themselves at us.
I closed my eyes, breathed in. My leg had been bothering me all the way back from the refugees, but now it had reduced to an inch, barely any trouble at all. It seems they've decided we're more than just a sensor ghost.
It's possible, or else they're taking their chances now that the other two distractions have been neutralized.
This ship can accelerate harder, but at the expense of stealth, Lady Arryk countered.
Pushed much harder, the dark drives will begin to emit detectable byproducts, and the cryo-arithmetic modules will struggle to keep up with heat dissipation. We will light ourselves up. But if we're already lit, we don't know that we are.
It doesn't matter how hard we run, Pinky said. We saw how futile it was when we swung past this system on our way to Hela. Ships tried to run. Sometimes the wolves let them get a little bit ahead, but it only ever ends the same way.
I'll countenance a small increase in our engine output, Lady Arryk declared. There are measures which can mitigate the reaction overspill for a short while, and if we bias the cryo-arithmetic cooling to our stern and let our bows run hot, we can still keep a cold face to the wolves.
And if there are wolves ahead of us, I asked,
then have some very short, snappy prayers in hand, Pinky said. Lady Arryk's manner became businesslike.
Your assessment, Clavaine. Could the pigs withstand an increased G-load for a few more hours?
Only if it's a question of our survival. Probably Rose says some of them are barely hanging on, with the injuries they came aboard with. This may be more than they can tolerate, until we begin treating them properly.
I must consider the overall outcome.
Split the difference, then, Pinky said. Give us one more G, and I'll inform them that it's a temporary increase.
You'll go to them? I asked.
He was already moving. Can't have them thinking that the only one with tact and sensitivity on the ship is a human, can we? The measures Lady Arryk would need to instigate within the dark drives and cryo-arithmetic systems could not have been implemented instantly, even if she had complete command of the ship. She first had to formulate her desires within the narrow control protocols that the ship seemed willing to listen to, and then she had to proceed a step at a time, verifying each alteration before moving to the next. This was delicate, unorthodox work. To tinker with the reaction balances inside a conjoiner drive, especially a dark drive, was to risk invoking immediate catastrophe. But, as I had to understand, Lady Arryk carried the secret knowledge of conjoiners within herself, and her gifts, as I was now learning, were prodigious. "We'll initiate in 10 minutes, she announced, when she had done all that she could. That should give Pinky time to get back from the evacuees. I'm sorry for what both of you have had to go through today, but you've a feeling it will be hitting him the hardest. Am I wrong? Pinky is a shot fired into the future. Tumbling, fragmenting. He ought to have slowed down by now, ought to have stopped, but he just keeps moving, gaining scar tissue. Sometimes I think the pain is what stops him dying. Snowdrop's death and the loss of the stronghold will not end him, Clavaine. He will be hurt by it, and it will increase the pressure behind those eyes and add to the scars, but it will not be more than he can take. How can you know? Because I know a tenth of what Pinky has already been through, and that is enough. I'm daring to hope. I shook my head, smiling at my own conceitedness. No, never mind. What? That at some point he might not consider me the most contemptible thing he's ever seen. That maybe, just maybe, I might earn about 1% of his respect. Perhaps you're nearer than you realize. But give yourself time as well. His friendship is not easily won. Once made, though, no force in the universe can undo it. Clavaine, would you? But she trailed off, her attention snagged back to the displays of Yellowstone. What? Something may be happening. The locus is showing an elongation. I frowned, unable to perform the necessary three-dimensional contortions to make sense of the changing data. A pincer movement. Too soon to rule out a bifurcation in the flow, which would be a precursor to a pincering. Lady Arryk became immobile, her attention so laser-focused that I was reminded of some ambush predator, poised in perfect stillness before springing for its prey. No, not that. At least I do not believe so. The elongation is due to an angular deflection in the column. It's no longer aligned exactly with our vector, so we are starting to see down the length of it. She snapped her eyes from the readouts, looking at me with a strange, pleading intensity. I want to believe it, Clavaine, but I am not sure that I dare. They were hard on us, and now they deflect. Wolves don't just give up, do they? Not in my experience. Unless this is an attack mode I haven't seen before. Something new. Without warning, Glass's voice cut across the control room. It's not something new. You're back, I said, surprised and relieved. Careful, Clavaine. You nearly sound pleased to hear me. Are you back? Only temporarily, dear friends. Scythe has raised me above a minimum consciousness threshold for one reason alone, to offer analysis and guidance in an extreme situation, one far beyond the ship's library of past scenarios. Your assessment, Hourglass? The flow is indeed deflecting, Lady Arryk. The wolves have abandoned this target and selected another. Lady Arryk shuffled through Scythe's readouts, adjusting thresholds and filters accordingly. I see it now, she said. Hourglass is right. There's something else drawing the flow. More fool me not to have spotted it sooner. Spotted what sooner? A radio frequency emission, Clavaine. Very strong, omnidirectional. A broadcast, unmistakably a hallmark of human intelligence. Allure. She smiled deliciously. Wolf bait. We like wolf bait, don't we, Hourglass? We do indeed, Lady Arryk. Especially when we are not the bait. Scythe is in receipt of a simple transmission. Audio only. Shall I play it? I think you should, Glass said. I very much think you should. Voices sang, Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that writing, John the Revelator. John the Revelator wrote the Book of the Seven Seals. He anticipated that there would be difficulties, Glass said,
anticipated them, and decided that you would most definitely benefit from a larger distraction. Lady Arryk directed my attention to one of the displays. Dark drive emissions, hotter and noisier than our own, easily detectable across several light minutes. There's only one other ship in this system that could be putting out that much energy, in addition to the radio signals. He's come in from the edge of the system, I said, awed and astonished in the same instant. He can't have waited for us to run into trouble. He must have made this decision days ago, perhaps as soon as we left him behind. He's positioning himself at the trailing Lagrange point behind Marco's Eye, where ships used to gather during trade stopovers, Lady Arryk said. Wolf activity will already have been intense there. They'll have picked apart any wrecks that survived the first part of the cull. This is a taunt, a deliberate provocation. One that, judging by the actions of the flow, is working, Glass remarked. Lady Arryk returned to the images of Yellowstone. It's abandoning us. I can't say that every element in the flow's given up on the chase, but if any are left, it's a small percentage of the total. Will John the Revelator be able to escape? I asked. No, Lady Arryk said, with a weary finality. No, no hope of that at all. You've seen that ship, Clavaine. It's 40 times bigger than Scythe, and it was old and broken when it reached this system. John the Revelator knows that just as well as we do. This is only going to end one way. He's becoming visible, Glass said. He's pushing those dark drives far outside their safe regime. They're glowing like stars. He doesn't want to give the wolves any reason to turn around, I commented, keeping my voice to a near whisper. And he must know that we're aware of his actions, and using them to our advantage, which we must. I called down to Pinky and probably Rose. This is Clavaine. We have an opportunity to shake the wolves loose and make a clean break for interstellar space, but only if we push as hard as we can. We'll be throwing everything into the fire, and it will be hard on the weakest of the evacuees. Once we open up the engines, you'll be unable to move around or offer any sort of assistance to the injured. Is there going to be any debate about this? Pinky asked. None. I just thought you should be ready. There was a silence before he answered. Spoken like the old man. So we pushed harder, all the way up to 4 G's. Under that load, almost any movement was impractical and even speaking and concentrating became less easy. With each breath, I felt as if my ribs were heaving against a pile of books on my chest. The best we could do was remain still and observe. John the Revelator was now the brightest energy source anywhere in the system, with the exception of Epsilon Eridani itself. His drive emissions were 2 close-set beacons, 2 miniature suns, flaring and flickering with incipient instability. But an ashen veil of wolf machines was beginning to cloud our view of them. It was not just the flow that had been assigned to us that was converging on that other ship. 10 times as many elements were oozing in from different points around Yellowstone. It was as if all the destruction that we had witnessed today was but a prelude to this greatest of conquests. Perhaps, in the long run, his efforts made no difference to our chances. But I wanted to believe that across those light minutes, not so very far, some part of John the Revelator was able to detect our movements, picking up on a whisper of exotic radiation from our faint, but unavoidably heightened dark drive emissions, or seeing the heat spiking from the parts of the hull no longer blanketed by the cryo-arithmetic engines. His angle of view was different to that of the wolf flow that had been behind us, and he might have seen some trace of us and known that we were responding. We had to trust that the other flows did not have a better angle on us, or at least that they were otherwise so fixated on this new prize as to fail to notice us. Supposition, never to be proven or disproven. But it suited me to believe that one more noble act went knowingly recorded, that against the long ledger of questionable deeds that made up his strange, distended life, perhaps the longest, strangest life ever lived, John the Revelator, writer of the Book of the Seventh Seal, felt absolved, if only in those last sweet moments of his existence.
If I know him, Lady Alec said, something will happen just before he succumbs. He will try to take as many of them with him as he can. We had warning, but only a little. The two close-set stars diverged. John had cut them away from himself like two old-style chemical boosters detaching from the main core of a rocket. At a certain separation, Lady Arryk said it could not have been more than a handful of kilometers, the engines detonated. We needed no magnification or image enhancement to see the consequences of that. If Scythe had possessed real windows, we would have seen the flash with our own eyes, and probably had to squint away to avoid temporary blindness. The explosion had been instantaneous and singular, so huge that it seemed to emanate from the volume between the engines, swallowing them instantly, and, in the same silent deflagration, taking every atom of the ship with it, and perhaps some useful number of wolf elements. The chorus had been continuing until the moment it ceased.
Tell me who's there riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's there riding, John the Revelator. John the Revelator wrote the book.
He was gone, and still we fled. Chapter 20. We held at 4 G's for an hour, then reduced to 3, and after 6 hours agreed to drop the acceleration to 1 gravity for as long as it took to tend to the refugees and address the worst of their ailments. Pinky, probably Rose, and I went down to them, while Lady Arryk kept an eye on the ship and its surroundings, all of our nerves still on edge. We dared to hope that we had given the wolves the slip, and perhaps we had, but it would be many days or weeks before we had any certainty. The feelings that rose in me were bitterly familiar from our time in the Salmasis. I had learned then, and was relearning now, that there was only so much worry a human being could tolerate. Never mind the next days or weeks. They were as irrelevant as the next million years. What mattered was that for the next hour, I did not have to think about dying. When we arrived at the holding area, the refugees were still snug in their pits. There was no screaming, and the moans and grumbles of discomfort were strangely lulling to me. Barris looked up from his Barris-shaped enclosure.
Talk to us, he said.
I looked at Pinky, thinking he ought to be the one to address the pigs, but his nod gave me permission. He was waddling off along the aisles, joining probably Rose in seeking out those most in need of attention. We think the wolves have lost interest in us.
You think?
I smiled. There's rarely any certainty, but the indications are that the flow broke away from us, seeking another target.
When will we know if we're safe?
Maybe never. But it probably won't be the wolves that kill us today.
Is that what counts as a morale-raising speech?
But Barris met my eyes and nodded.
You got us out of Swinehouse, Clavaine. Whatever else happens, when we get to this water world, you have my gratitude for that.
Pinky called over to me. He was leaning over one of the refugees, knees bent, hands propped against them for support.
Something's happening, Stink. The floor's pushing her back out again.
Who are you? I asked. The pig looked at me.
Mira?
Pinky and I reached down, trying to help her as the floor oozed back towards the level, filling in the pit.
Are you hurt, Mira?
I noticed a badly swollen wrist and wondered if the bones were broken beneath it.
There's those hurt worse than me, but it doesn't sting so much as it did before we went into these pits. Now it just tingles, mostly.
It still needs treating. 4 of the sphere robots came into the chamber. Pinky and I watched them guardedly, conscious that we had no direct control over these machines. They were operating at the whim of the ship, beyond any authority we might possess. The robots swooped over to Mira. They extended their arms, reaching to lift her out of the infilling pit. I stepped back, sensing that it would be futile to obstruct their actions. Pinky was a fraction slower, or more stubborn, and got a less than gentle shove in the belly, sending him stumbling backwards, arms flailing until I reached out and grabbed him by the elbow.
Doctor knows best,
I think, I said. Pinky grunted something back. Not quite a thanks, but close enough to pass as one. Mira resisted the robots, as might anyone in the same circumstances. But they had more limbs than she could kick or thrash against, and they were able to restrain her with what seemed like reasonable gentleness. They hauled her into the air, distributing their pressure points evenly. They're going to help you, I said. Mira quietened, becoming limp. The transition was so sudden that I could only guess that one of the robots had jabbed some sedative into her. With her body suspended between them, the robots left the chamber. Pinky whispered, "You don't really know what they are going to do to her. The ship's taken care of everyone until now. Unless it's psychotic, I think we can assume it means to continue as it began. It'll be taking her away to the medical suite, just as it did with Glass." In time, more robots came. It appeared that pigs were emerging from the floor in the order of those most in need of treatment, the ship performing some inscrutable calculus of triage behind the scenes. Evidently, it lacked the capacity to deal with them all at once, so the pigs were being spirited away in ones and twos only. But then it was clear that just being in the pits had provided some anesthetic effect on the worst injuries, with most of the wounded reporting a numbing or reduction of pain. But the mechanisms in the floor could only do so much, and so further treatment had to be conducted somewhere else. "This ship isn't mad," I said quietly, for Pinky's ears alone. "If anything, it's saner than Glass."
"As comparisons go, Stink," I smiled. "It could use some work, I know."
At Lady Arik's persuasion, the ship allowed us back to the medical suite where I had last seen Glass. That meeting felt much longer ago than a day, consigned to some more innocent part of my life. Snowdrop, Omori, and John the Revelator had all been alive when I was last in here. Now their deaths seemed to mark some dividing line between the man I had felt myself to be and the one I knew, deep down, I truly was. We gathered around the room's focal point, the container in which I had last seen Glass. She might still have been in there for all we could tell, but now there was no way to see into it. The support medium had become a murky yellow-green, hiding its secrets, and the surgical machines had pulled away from whatever activity they had been engaged in before.
"Are you in there, Glass?" Lady Arik asked, touching a palm to the enclosing shell.
"She'd better be," I said.
"Not helpful,"
Lady Arik snapped.
"She can't be anywhere else, can she? I saw her in this bottle. The machines were fussing over her."
"Damn those nine cats. I never liked them." Lady Arik removed her palm from the container. It left a cold imprint, blushing away after a few seconds.
"We need her, not just because there will always be aspects of this ship that she understands better than me, but the rest of it, too. Her tactical and strategic expertise dovetails with my own."
Her eyes flashed onto me.
"And yours, when you relearn it."
"Glass," I called. "If there's a part of you still alive enough to hear this, you find a way to come back to us."
"Giving her orders now?"
Lady Arik asked mildly. Pinky made a low cough.
"Was that there when we arrived?"
Another door had opened on the opposite side of the medical suite, beckoning us to investigate. Stepping into the chamber beyond, I took an involuntary breath, taken aback that such a large space could have been in the ship all along, hidden from my exploration. It was 20 times larger than the medical suite, big enough to contain another spacecraft entirely. All it was, though, was a larger annex of the medical suite, filled with multiply duplicated samples of the same equipment. We moved from bottle to bottle, quickly confirming that each contained the faint but unmistakable form of a pig. Judging by the quick whirring processes going on in and around the bottles, various forms of surgery and healing were taking place.
"Thank you, Scythe," I said, not caring what the others made of my talking to the ship.
"You're trying to help them, and we understand. Please continue doing what you're doing."
"Healing them is only half the battle," Lady Arik said.
None of this will help if they cannot be kept alive afterwards. That either means reefer sleep, or life support, or...
I think we can trust that the ship has things in hand, I said, or that it will do, very shortly. The far wall was not fixed. It was moving back very slowly, like the barrel of a piston. As it retreated, it was leaving a structure behind it. It had a soft, improperly formed look to it, like a casting that had been removed from the mould when it was still molten. But it was sharpening as we looked, gaining form and function. It was a reef asleep casket, all but identical to the ones Glass and I had used. The retreating wall finished forming the casket. Then a new one began to bud out of the same moving surface.
Something got the message, Pinky said.
Our friends and allies, even such a doubtful and mercurial ally as John the Revelator, had turned the wolves from our scent. But it was only when we were a month out of Yellowstone that we allowed ourselves to believe it. Lady Arryk used every passive sensor at her disposal and finally decreed that there was no trace of the enemy ahead or behind us, at least not out to a range of several light minutes. Of course, there could be no certainty in that, but since no better reassurance could be hoped for, we all accepted it gratefully. Under pressure, as I had learned in Sun Hollow, the human mind will settle for a lot less than certainty. Day by day, the ship had continued healing pigs and manufacturing reefer-sleep caskets. Neither process could be accelerated, but once we had a sense of the schedule, we could begin to plan around it. There was food, water, and life support in abundance. We never saw where our sustenance was coming from, and perhaps that was for the best. All that mattered was that the tireless robots came and went without cessation, and if food of one kind was rejected, the pigs could be fussy, due to their hypertrophied sense of smell and taste. Then an alternative was quickly offered. Over the early days of that month, the machines, and by implication Scythe, came to an understanding of its guests, and gradually tailored its offerings and amenities until all were satisfied. Washing and toilet facilities were created, as well as furniture and concessions to privacy, including personal sleeping spaces. Garments were offered, the rags taken away, and the pigs rummaged through hoppers of clean, colourful fabric, trying on pieces for size and style. With the ship holding at 1G for the time being, it was as close to a normal life as most of the pigs had ever known. One by one, the healed ones came back to us. I was glad of that, preferring to have the proof of their recovery than having them sent straight into the new caskets. The other pigs saw that their friends had been made well, and began to believe that this frightening, unpredictable, and automated environment might be trying to help them. By then, most understood that it was our hope to have them all go into reefer sleep. But that brought its own concerns, too. The pigs were either alarmed at the general prospect of being frozen, or more specifically aware of the particular risks associated with hibernation and pigs. On this matter, we could only offer so much reassurance. All the same, the ship clearly meant for us to sleep. When we all went into the caskets, the acceleration could be ramped up as steeply as Scythe desired. It would be a lot less complicated if none of us needed to breathe or walk around in that interval. Barras turned out to be key. He was wise enough not to be completely persuaded that any part of this was going to be safe. By submitting to reefer sleep, the pigs were accepting a reasonable chance of death. But it was a risk that came from considerations of physics and biology, not the mad whims of the swine queen or the cold predation of the wolves. They could deal with that, in their fashion. Not all the pigs would see it that way, but a small number of dissenters could be press-ganged into the caskets if it came to open resistance. Barras, though, was confident that a majority of the pigs would come to an understanding that this was still the best hope for them collectively, and the doubters would eventually fall in with the rest, grudgingly, but peacefully. We left them to it. If we were to instill trust in the pigs, then we had to let them manage their own affairs, with a de facto leader, and something approaching an ad hoc democracy. I reiterated my earlier pledge.
If, for some reason, reef asleep was not an option for the pigs, then I would remain awake and see out the long watch with them. But at the same time, I made it clear that I expected to be able to offer very little assistance. In the end, there was unanimity among the pigs. How they got there was no concern of mine. All that mattered was that Barras had persuaded them to go into the caskets. By then, nearly all the cabinets had been created, stretching in a long, ordered row down the length of that huge chamber. The robots played no further part in the process, leaving us to coordinate how the units were occupied, configured, and their revival clocks set. Lady Arryk ran various simulations of scythes crossing under different thrust patterns. The world time for our journey hardly varied with one parameter or another, but the competing scenarios did make a significant variation in elapsed ship time, amounting to nearly a year's difference in our onboard clocks. That would be a long time to wake up early, if the revival points were set too early. The trouble, as Lady Arryk made clear, was that Scythe could only begin detailed intelligence gathering when it was already within a few light months of Ararat. If it found wolves, or some other threat, it might need to adjust its deceleration and final approach profile. The exact details of our flight's end stages were therefore impossible to predict in advance, giving us no way to be sure when to set the revival clocks. "The pigs can wait until we're sure that there's a planet we can land on," Pinky said. "The rest of us can come out earlier." "By how much?" Lady Arryk asked, when it was just the four of us left warm, standing by our waiting caskets. The two that Glass and I had already used, one of which would suit Lady Arryk just as well, and the two new units that had been forged for Pinky and probably Rose.
"A month? 6 months? Maybe even a year. Sniff out the system, see how it lies, then refine our plans."
"If those plans demand high acceleration," I said, "staying awake for the rest of the voyage might not be an option." Pinky glanced at his casket. Outwardly, it looked the same as the other two, but its interior space was smaller, configured to provide a snug fit around a pig.
"So, we go back in.
And each time, we roll the dice on whether we come out again," I said.
"That'd be for me to fret about, not you."
But Lady Arryk sided with me.
"Clavaine is old as well, Pinky, older than either of us. The things Hourglass did to him have reset some of his morbidity markers, but reef asleep still presents a non-negligible risk. None of us must take any part of this lightly."
He lifted his snout.
"Do I look like I'm taking it lightly?"
"If I might offer an opinion?"
We all stopped and turned to face the voice. Glass was standing in the doorway. She had appeared silently, without warning. She looked just as she had before she went to the swine house, steady on her feet, lacking any visible injury and entirely in command of herself.
"I was only ever caretaking," Lady Arryk said decorously, extending a hand by way of welcome, even though they were standing far apart.
"It is good to see you, Hourglass.
We were becoming concerned after your absence."
"So concerned that you were ready to jump into my reef asleep casket?"
Glass asked. "You can't blame us for making arrangements," I said. "For all we knew, you'd be in that bottle for months. Besides, the ship has shown that it can make reef asleep caskets at will."
"You're quite correct, Clavaine."
She walked over to us, her gait steady. Perhaps she had grown marginally thinner or paler since I had last seen her clearly, but it was hard to be sure.
"In any case, there are no hard feelings. It is right that you should take to the caskets, now that I am restored. In fact, I will be here to supervise all four of you as you go into reef asleep."
"What of you?" Lady Arryk asked suspiciously.
"I will enter in good time," Glass answered. "There are a number of technical matters I'd like to attend to while Scythe is in transit. First of all, I will overview the final measures necessary for the completion of the hypermetric precursor device, the nature of which you were good enough to explain to Clavaine. Our layover on Ararat will provide the ideal environment to perform a number of low-energy system tests, safe from wolf interference."
"And between now and then?"
Lady Arryk asked. I was about to come to the other matter. The testing and integration of the Gideon stones. This will be delicate work, and it would do well not to be rushed. I shall remain awake for a period, anything up to several months, depending on my progress, and I shall wake earlier as well to complete whatever loose ends remain. I could assist, Lady Arryk said, and you most certainly shall, if for any reason I find myself unable to complete the work in a timely fashion. When you begin poking about with those stones, is there a danger of destroying the ship? I asked. Glass nodded enthusiastically.
Very much so.
Then, for the sake of my nerves, I think I'd rather be dead while you're doing it. Pinky had made his own mind up. He was already clambering into the casket. I met his eyes, nodded some wordless encouragement, and made similar arrangements of my own.